Chapter 51 Holden. Holden knew that humans could tolerate extremely high G-forces over short durations. With proper safety systems, professional daredevils had sustained impacts in excess of 25 Gs and survived. The human body deformed naturally, absorbed energy and soft tissues, and diffused impacts across larger areas. He also knew that the problem with extended exposure to high G was that the constant pressure on the circulatory system would begin exposing weaknesses. Have a weak spot in an artery that could turn into an aneurysm in 40 years? A few hours at 7G might just pop it open now. Capillaries in the eyes started to leak. The eye itself deformed, sometimes causing permanent damage. And then there were the hollow spaces, like the lungs and digestive tract. You piled on enough gravity, and they collapsed. And while combat ships might maneuver at very high G for short durations, every moment spent under thrust multiplied the danger. Eros didn't need to shoot anything at them. It could just keep speeding up until their bodies exploded under the pressure. His console was showing 5G, but even as he watched, it shifted to 6. They couldn't keep this up. Eros was going to get away. There was nothing he could do about it. But he still didn't order Alex to stop accelerating. As if Naomi were reading his mind, "We can't keep this up," popped up on his console, her user ID in front of the text. "Fred's working on it. They might need us to be within range of Eros when they come up with a plan," he replied. Even moving his fingers the millimeters necessary to use the controls built into his chair for exactly this reason was painfully difficult. "Within range for what?" Naomi typed. Holden didn't answer. He had no idea. His blood was burning with drugs to keep him awake and alert even while his body was being crushed. The drugs had the contradictory effect of making his brain run at double speed while not allowing him to actually think. But Fred would come up with something. Lots of smart people were thinking about it. And Miller. Miller was lugging a fusion bomb through Eros right now. When your enemy had the tech advantage, you came at him as low-tech as you could get. Maybe one sad detective pulling a nuclear weapon on a wagon would slip through their defenses. Naomi had said they weren't magic. Maybe Miller could make it, and give them the opening they needed. Either way, Holden had to be there, even if it was just to see. "Fred," Naomi typed to him. Holden opened the connection. Fred looked to him like a man suppressing a grin. "Holden," he said. "How are you guys holding up?"
6 Gs, spit it out."
"Right. So it turns out that the UN cops have been ripping Protogen's network apart, looking for clues as to what the hell's been going on. Guess who showed up as public enemy number one for the Protogen bigwigs? Yours truly. Suddenly all is forgiven, and Earth welcomes me back into her warm embrace. The enemy of my enemy thinks I'm a righteous bastard. Goody. My spleen is collapsing. Hurry up," Holden typed. "The idea of Eros crashing into Earth is bad enough. Extinction-level event, even if it's just a rock. But the UN people have been watching the Eros feeds, and it's scaring the shit out of them."
"And?"
"Earth is preparing to launch her entire ground-based nuclear arsenal. Thousands of nukes. They're going to vaporize that rock. The Navy will intercept what's left after the initial attack and sterilize that entire area of space with constant nuclear bombardment. I know it's a risk, but it's what we have." Holden resisted the urge to shake his head. He didn't want to wind up with one cheek stuck to the chair permanently. "Eros dodged the Nauvoo. It's going 6 Gs right now, and according to Naomi, Miller feels no acceleration. Whatever it's doing, it doesn't have the same inertial limitations we have. What's to stop it from just dodging again? At these speeds, the missiles will never be able to turn around and catch it. And what the hell are you targeting on? Eros doesn't reflect radar anymore."
"That's where you come in," We need you to try bouncing a laser off of it. We can use the Rosinante's targeting system to guide the missiles in. I hate to break it to you, but we'll be out of this game long before those missiles show. We can't keep up. We can't guide the missiles in for you. And once we lose visual, no one will be able to track where Eros is. You might have to put it on autopilot, Fred said, meaning, you might all have to die in the seats you're in right now. I've always wanted to die a martyr and all, but what makes you think that Rosie can beat this thing on its own? I'm not killing my crew because you can't come up with a good plan. Fred leaned toward the screen, his eyes narrowing. For the first time, Fred's mask slipped, and Holden saw the fear and helplessness behind it. Look, I know what I'm asking, but you know the stakes. This is what we have. I didn't call you to hear how it won't work. Either help or give up. Right now, Devil's Advocate is just another name for asshole. I'm crushing myself to death, probably doing permanent damage just because I wouldn't give up, you bastard. So sorry I didn't sign my crew up to die the minute you said to do it, Holden thought. Having to type everything out had the advantage of restraining emotional outbursts. Instead of ripping into Fred for questioning his commitment, Holden just typed, "Let me think about it," and cut the connection. The optical tracking system watching Eros flashed a warning to him that the asteroid was increasing speed again. The giant sitting on his chest added a few pounds as Alex pushed the Rosinante to keep up. A flashing red indicator informed Holden that because of the duration they'd spent at the current acceleration, he could expect as much as 12% of the crew to stroke out. It would go up. Enough time, and it would reach 100%. He tried to remember the Rosie's maximum theoretical acceleration. Alex had already flown it at 12G briefly when they'd left the Doniger. The actual limit was one of those trivial numbers, a way to brag about something your ship would never really do. 15G, was it? 20? Miller hadn't felt any acceleration at all. How fast could you go if you didn't even feel it? Almost without realizing he was going to do it, Holden activated the master engine cutoff switch. Within seconds, he was in freefall, racked with coughs as his organs tried to find their original resting places inside his body. When Holden had recovered enough to take one really deep breath, his first in hours, Alex came on the comm.
"Cap, did you kill the engines?"
the pilot said.
"Yeah, that was me. We're done. Eros is getting away no matter what we do. We were just prolonging the inevitable and risking some crew deaths in the process."
Naomi turned her chair and gave him a sad little smile. She was sporting a black eye from the acceleration. "We did our best," she said. Holden shoved out of his chair hard enough that he bruised his forearms on the ceiling, then shoved off hard again and pinned his back to a bulkhead by grabbing onto a fire extinguisher mount. Naomi was watching him from across the deck, her mouth a comical O of surprise. He knew he probably looked ridiculous, like a petulant child throwing a tantrum, but he couldn't stop himself. He broke free of his grip on the fire extinguisher and floated into the middle of the deck. He hadn't known he'd been pounding on the bulkhead with his other fist. Now that he did, his hand hurt. "God damn it," he said. "Just God damn it." "We—" Naomi started, but he cut her off. "We did our best. What the hell does that matter?" Holden felt a red haze in his mind, and not all of it was from the drugs. "I did my best to help the Canterbury, too. I tried to do the right thing when I let us be taken by the Doniger. Did my good intentions mean jack shit?" Naomi's expression went flat. Now her eyelids dropped, and she stared at him from narrow slits, her lips pressed together until they were almost white. "They wanted me to kill you," Holden thought. "They wanted me to kill my crew just in case Eros can't break 15G and I couldn't do it." The guilt and rage and sorrow played against each other, turning into something thin and unfamiliar.
He couldn't put a name to the feeling.
"You're the last person I'd expect to hear self-pity from," she said, her voice tight. "Where's the captain who's always asking, 'What can we do right now to make things better?'"
Holden gestured around himself helplessly. "Show me which button to push to stop everyone on Earth from being killed, I'll push it. Just as long as it doesn't kill you," he thought. Naomi unbuckled her harness and floated toward the crew ladder.
"I'm going below to check on Amos," she said, then opened the deck hatch. She paused.
"I'm your operations officer, Holden. Monitoring communication lines is part of the job. I know what Fred wanted."
Holden blinked, and Naomi pulled herself out of sight. The hatch slammed behind her with a bang that couldn't have been any harder than normal, but felt like it was anyway. Holden called up to the cockpit and told Alex to take a break and get some coffee. The pilot stopped on his way through the deck, looking like he wanted to talk, but Holden just waved him on. Alex shrugged and left. The watery feeling in his gut had taken root and bloomed into a full-fledged, limb-shaking panic. Some vicious, vindictive, self-flagellating part of his mind insisted on running non-stop movies of Eros hurtling toward Earth. It would come screaming down out of the sky, like every religion's vision of apocalypse made real. Fire and earthquakes and pestilential rain sweeping the land. But each time Eros hit the Earth in his mind, it was the explosion of the Canterbury he saw. A shockingly sudden white light, and then nothing but the sound of ice pebbles rattling across his hull like gentle hail. Mars would survive, for a while. Pockets of the belt would hold out even longer, probably. They had a culture of making do, surviving on scraps, living on the bleeding edge of their resources. But in the end, without Earth, everything would eventually die. Humans had been out of the gravity well a long time, long enough to have developed the technology to cut that umbilical cord, but they just never bothered to do it. Stagnant. Humanity, for all its desire to fling itself into every livable pocket it could reach, had become stagnant. Satisfied to fly around in ships built half a century before, using technology that hadn't changed in longer than that. Earth had been so focused on her own problems that she'd ignored her far-flung children, except when asking for her share of their labors. Mars had bent her entire population to the task of remaking the planet, changing its red face to green, trying to make a new Earth to end their reliance on the old. And the belt had become the slums of the solar system, everyone too busy trying to survive to spend any time creating something new. "We found the protomolecule at exactly the right time for it to do the most damage to us," Holden thought. It had looked like a shortcut, a way to avoid having to do any of the work, to just jump straight to godhood. And it had been so long since anything was a real threat to humanity outside of itself that no one was even smart enough to be scared. Dresden had said it himself. The things that had made the protomolecule, loaded it into Phoebe and shot it at the Earth, were already godlike back when humanity's ancestors thought photosynthesis and the flagellum were cutting edge. But he'd taken their ancient engine of destruction and turned the key anyway. Because when you got right down to it, humans were still just curious monkeys. They still had to poke everything they found with a stick to see what it did. The red haze in Holden's vision had taken on a strange strobing pattern. It took him a moment to realize that a red telltale on his panel was flashing, letting him know that the Ravi was calling. He kicked off a nearby crash couch, floated back to his station, and opened the link.
"Rosinante here. Ravi, go ahead."
"Holden, why are we stopped?" McBride asked.
"Because we weren't going to keep up anyway, and the danger of crew casualties was getting too high," he replied.
It sounded weak, even to him. Cowardly. McBride didn't seem to notice.
"Roger, I'm going to get new orders. We'll let you know if anything changes."
Holden killed the connection and stared blankly at the console.
The visual tracking system was doing its very best to keep Eros in sight. The Rossi was a good ship, state-of-the-art. And since Alex had tagged the asteroid as a threat, the computer would do everything in its power to keep track of it. But Eros was a fast-moving, low-albedo object that didn't reflect radar. It could move unpredictably, and at high speed. It was just a matter of time before they lost track of it, especially if it wanted to be lost track of. Next to the tracking information on his console, a small data window opened to inform him that the Ravi had turned on its transponder. It was standard practice, even for military ships, to keep them on, when there was no apparent threat or need for stealth. The radio man on the little UNN Corvette must have flipped it back on out of habit. And now the Rossi registered as a known vessel, and threw it onto the threat display with a gently pulsing green dot and a name tag. Holden looked at it blankly for a long moment. He felt his eyes go wide. "Shit," Holden said, then opened the shipwide comm. "Naomi, I need you in ops." "I think I'd rather stay down here for a bit," she replied. Holden hit the battle station's alert button on his console. The deck light shifted to red and a klaxon sounded three times. "Exo Nagata to ops," he said. Let her chew him out later. He'd have it coming. But right now he didn't have any time to waste. Naomi was on the ops deck in less than a minute. Holden had already buckled back into his crash couch and was pulling up the comm logs. Naomi pushed over to a chair and belted in as well. She gave him an inquiring look. "Are we going to die after all?" But said nothing. If he said so, she would. He felt a spike of equal parts admiration for and impatience with her. He found what he was looking for in the logs before speaking. "Okay," he said. "We've had radio contact with Miller after Eros dropped off of radar, is that right?" "Yes, that's right," she said. "But his suit isn't powerful enough to transmit through the shell of Eros out to much distance, so one of the moored ships is boosting the signal for him. Which means that whatever Eros is doing to kill the radar isn't killing all radio transmissions from outside." "That seems right," Naomi said, a growing curiosity in her voice. "And you still have the control codes for the 5 OPA freighters on the surface, right?" "Yes, sir." And then a moment later, "Oh, shit." "Okay," Holden said, turning in his chair to face Naomi with a grin. "Why do the Rossi and every other naval ship in the system have a switch to turn off their transponders? So the enemy can't get a missile lock on the transponder signal and blow them up," she said, sharing his grin now. Holden spun his chair back around and began opening a comm channel to Tycho Station. "XO, would you be so kind as to use the control codes Miller gave you to turn those 5 OPA freighters back on and fire up their transponders? Unless our visitor on Eros can outrun radio waves, I think we've gotten around the acceleration problem." "Aye, aye, Captain," Naomi replied. Even looking the other way, Holden could hear the smile in her voice, and it melted the last of the ice in his gut. They had a plan. They were going to make a difference. "Call coming in from the Ravi," Naomi said. "You want it before I turn the transponders on?" "Hell yes." The line clicked. "Captain Holden, we've got our new orders. Seems we're going to be chasing that thing a little further." McBride sounded almost like someone who hadn't just been sent to her death. Stoic. "You might want to hold off on that for a couple minutes," Holden said. "We have an alternative." As Naomi activated the transponders on the 5 OPA freighters Miller had left moored to the surface of Eros, Holden laid out the plan to McBride and then, on a separate line, Fred. By the time Fred had gotten back to him with an enthusiastic approval of the plan, from both him and the UN Naval Command, the 5 freighters were pinging away, telling the solar system where they were. An hour after that, the largest swarm of interplanetary nuclear weapons in the history of humanity had been fired and were winging their way toward Eros. "We're going to win," Holden thought as he watched the missiles take flight like a swarm of angry red dots on his threat display. "We're going to beat this thing." And what was more, His crew was going to see the end of it. No one else had to die. Except...
Miller's calling, Naomi said. Probably noticed we turned his ships back on.
Holden had a wrenching feeling in his stomach. Miller would be there, on Eros, when those missiles arrived. Not everyone would get to celebrate the coming victory.
Hey, Miller, how you doing? He said, not quite able to keep the funereal tone out of his voice.
Miller's voice was choppy and half-drowned by static, but not so garbled that Holden couldn't hear the tone in it and know that he was about to take a piss all over their parade.
Holden, Miller said, we have a problem.